Share Care, helping you get younger, get guidance, get better care, get smart, get fit. Radio MD presents Share Care Radio with Daria Long Gillespie, MD.
Hi, it's Dr. Daria. Every month we'll host a women's health segment on the latest information that you need to know. Today we're speaking with Patty Garrity, nurse practitioner, ShareCare advisory board member, and author of the book Pathway Through Pregnancy, and passionate teacher about women's health. Patty, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. I'm excited.
Now, me too. Now, I'd love to hear your take on where women's health is going in 2015, including some of the changes and most recent guidelines on screening. So first I want to jump into is mammograms. At what age should a woman get her first mammogram?
There is a lot of discussion about this. The United States is basically the only country left in the world where the majority of guidelines say start screening mammograms at age 40. Europe, Great Britain, Australia, New Zealand, Canada all recommend starting at 50. There's one agency in the United States, the United States Preventative Services Task Force, that has said between 40 and 49, talk to your doctor. They don't say don't screen, but they say make an individualized decision. The reason this is so controversial is because we know that there are a huge number of what are called false positives when you do screening in this younger age group. Their risk of breast cancer overall is quite low. However, the kind of breast cancer that tends to occur in younger women tends to be more aggressive. So while it rarely occurs, when it does occur, it acts quickly and it grows quickly.
Mm-hmm. And that's what's so hard, is that in younger women it's so aggressive it could come on in between mammograms even.
Exactly. And so what they say is that they're worried about screening these women. There's a huge number of what we call callbacks. They mm-hmm. see something on the screening mammogram, they call you back for further imaging. Those are what scientists call a false positive. We call you back mm-hmm. and everything is actually okay. And they say this causes a lot of anxiety among women, and it costs money, of course, but the anxiety is usually the factor that's cited.
What do you think is true? Like, a lot of women will say, well, but if I could be at risk, I'd rather know. What's your personal philosophy on that?
Well, absolutely. There's even data about this, Dr. Daria. They estimate that for every true cancer that they find in this 40 to 49-year-old age group, they're going to have to call back between 300 and 400 women. So that's one cancer per 300 to 400 callbacks. However, when they ask women, what do you think about that, they say, I'd just as soon you call back 500 women to find one cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So I think where we need to go is rather than not screening. I mean, every healthcare provider you talk to, doctor, nurse, practitioner, will say to you, I can't tell you how many women in my practice whose lives have been saved by mammogram screening in their 40s. And so mm-hmm. if the worry, the trade-off, is saving a life versus causing anxiety, why not just put the education in place? And the estimate is that if you go in every year between 40 and 49 for that screening mammogram, the chances of you're being called back at least once is better than 50%.
Mm-hmm.
So I tell my women when we start screening at age 40, the chances of you're being called back in the next 10 years are 50-50. Count on it. Don't worry about the callback.
Okay, that's great information. So you tell people, you know, if you're going to do it in your 40s, have a discussion with your provider. And if you do it, know that you'll get a lot of callbacks. It could be most likely false positive. Don't let that callback itself be the most stressful thing, just know to expect it. I like that viewpoint. Speaking of moving on to a different kind of cancer, and that is pap smears for cervical cancer. At what age should a woman be getting her first pap smear?
Well, there have been so many changes in these guidelines over the last 20 years, and that's because we've found out more and more and more information every year. We've always known that abnormal pap smears seem to be tied to sexual activity, but it was only in the 1980s that they discovered the virus, human papilloma virus, that really, really is linked to cancer of the cervix. And over the ensuing decades, we found out more about it. There's over 100 strains. Some of them are associated with cancer. Some of them don't seem to be associated with anything at all. It is a very normal event to get HPV. If you look at fit women in their 50s, 80% of women show signs of having had HPV at some time in their life. So we don't worry about acquiring it. We worry about maintaining that virus, not having your own immune system not cleared up. So when do we do a Pap test? We start at age 21. Why? Teenagers don't get cervical cancer. It doesn't really matter when you become sexually active and acquire that HPV. It takes years for it to develop into a cancer. Women tend to overestimate the power of a Pap test. Women say to me all the time, oh, well, I had my Pap test, I'm all okay. The Pap test measures for one body part and one disease, the cervix and cancer. Doesn't tell you anything about anything else. So while you don't start Pap tests until age 21, there are other parts of your body, a whole lot of other parts of your body that still need to be supervised and taught how to stay healthy. So the gynecology exam is one thing. A Pap test is different. Start at age 21.
Okay, and the gynecology test, when does that start?
That's a pelvic exam, right? The gynecology test is going to start whenever there's a gynecological problem or issue. So there's no magic age to see a gynecologist, but if I have a 15-year-old that has horrible menstrual cycles, she needs care. She needs attention. If I have a 17-year-old who needs contraception, she needs care. She needs attention. So that's when you would start.
And I think that's a really important point, is to separate out Pap smears from pelvic exams. I know there's a lot of guideline disagreements from different groups about when to do pelvic exams too, but it's important to point out the pelvic exam is much more about much more than just the Pap smear alone. So really important to talk.
I tell my patients there's more to you than your cervix.
Well, thank you very much. Women across the world appreciate that, Patty. Now, moving on from cancer to kind of more wellness, and that gets into the world of exercise and sleep. There's been a lot of research lately about the benefits of strength training for women. You know, tell us more about strength training and keeping healthy bones.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if people ask me what are the one or two things that are most important for women to do for their health, and number one is hands down stop smoking. That's a different topic, but there's nothing you can do better for yourself. But number two,
I like it. I like anybody who puts in a smoking cessation plug, even if we're talking about exercise.
Okay. But yes, number two is start moving. Move as much as you can. And I actually did my graduate research on exercise and working mothers. And what was surprising was that, and it's not my data that showed this, it was someone else's, that it didn't matter whether you were getting a paycheck or not. All mothers feel a terrible conflict between so-called taking time for themselves and their role as a mother. And so the working mothers gone all day need to get home, be with their children, but mothers that are at home are also, I can't leave my children. So one of the huge things I think that helps women is understanding that exercise works in increments. The standard goal is the equivalent of a half an hour a day of moderate to strenuous physical activity, but that can be done in 15-minute increments. It can be done in a two-hour hike and spread over time. And so for women, that's a huge issue, is how do I fit it into my schedule? Don't tell me how that I need to exercise. That's one great big fat duh. But tell me how I fit it into my schedule.
And fitting it in also can be in increments. I also like fitting in exercise with your munchkin when possible, if you have children at home.
Absolutely. They one very old study now showed that the strongest indicator for girls to stay active during their adolescent years is if mom exercises. Dad has almost no effect. The bathroom plumbing can be broken. Grandma can be in the hospital with a hip replacement. Dad's going to go to the gym.
Yes.
Mom, oh dear, we're out of bread. I have to go to the grocery store.
Yes.
And I tell
and
my patients.
It's so true, because moms really can be that role model for their children as far as exercise, as far as their diet, all that. They are the models for their children. So, Patty, thank you so much. This information has been so useful for women, and you're such a great advocate for them. We really look forward to having you on the show again soon. This is Dr. Daria, and you're listening to Share Care Radio on Radio MD. Thanks for listening, and stay well.